That's Debatable is sponsored by MB&G. MB&G are specialists in the esoteric world of vehicle and furniture warranty insurance, delivering quite marvellous customer service, prompt claims payment, and a highly developed understanding of how to deliver these products in a way that is both compliant with the regulations and attractive to customers. Hello and welcome to That's Debatable, the weekly news podcast of the Free Speech Union. On January the 8th, 1697, Thomas Aikenhead, a 20-year-old student, was marched the 2 miles from the old Tolbooth prison on the High Street to a windswept sandy hillock just to the west of the causeway that crossed the marshes between Edinburgh and the port town of Leith, known as Galilee. Surrounded by the pious prayers of the clergymen of the Kirk, the Church of Scotland, Thomas was hanged by the neck until he was dead. What was Thomas? A murderer? A rapist? Was he one of Edinburgh's notorious resurrection men? No. Young Thomas's crime was that in an Edinburgh tavern on Christmas Eve, 1696, he had a drink and went on a rant offending the church and its stranglehold on Scottish culture. He was reported, arrested, and tried. The jury found Aikenhead guilty of cursing and railing against God, denying the incarnation and the Trinity, and scoffing at the scriptures. Thomas Aikenhead was the last person to be hanged for blasphemy in Britain. As such, he became a martyr and inspiration. The hanging of a young man for the crime of having a rant in a pub late at night became seen as an act of tyranny and oppression so heinous it was the spark that turned a barren, minor nation on the northwest fringe of Europe into the blazing furnace of ideas that was the Scottish Enlightenment, ideas that would change the world forever. The execution appalled Scottish society at the time and was both the high tide of the theocratic tyranny of 17th century Kirk and its tombstone. With Aikenhead's execution died all moral authority of those who would control the speech, conscience, and opinions of others. So writes a pseudonym, a man has written, or a woman has written in the Daily Skeptic, that piece, Ben, under a pseudonym, C.J. Strachan. He describes himself or herself as a concerned Scot. And it's a very powerful piece that we have deliberately opened today's episode with because of this very solemn moment that we stand in, I think, where it feels that that hideous situation, that last blasphemer who was, pretty much murdered, but it executed under the law, it feels that we are turning the clock back. And in the same article, or right at the beginning of that article, the pseudonym writer says that the Scottish Enlightenment will die on April the 1st, 2024, exactly 327 years, 8 months, and 24 days after the incident that provoked it. And we're talking here, of course, about the hate crime that comes into force. I don't know when people are listening to it, but it will have come into force on the 1st of April in Scotland. Ben, I don't know what you feel. That's quite a solemn opening to this episode. But I don't know what you feel about this moment for Scotland and whether that's a fair representation of where we are.
Well, I think there's no shortage of concerned Scots who could have penned an article like that one. I think, aside from the freedom of speech points, which are the first points that spring to mind, Aikenhead's story is a magnificent example of the Streisand effect in action and the attempt of the Church of Scotland to shut him down, to silence him, to stop his ideas from spreading, has resulted in us more than three centuries later, speaking about this 20-year-old student who may or may not have amounted to anything had he lived, and by all odds would have vanished into the obscurity of history. And yet here we are talking about him, and he's a pretty well-known name. It's a pretty well-known story, I think, particularly in Scotland, obviously. So yes, I think it is a really dark moment, and I think there has been an outpouring of concern and, frankly, horror commensurate with how utterly unhinged this piece of legislation is. And I think we've seen that in people contacting us for help in the last few days. And Tom, we should say this episode will be going out 4 or 5 days after we're recording it. So we're speaking now on the 28th of March, when Scotland is nominally still a free country. God only knows what will have happened by the time people are listening to this after the Easter weekend, and if the first arrests will have been made under the Hate Crime Act. They may well have been. So we're hostages to fortune a bit, Tom, speaking about this before it's come into effect. And it may well be, as I say, that the first casualties of this law have already been dragged into police stations.
It certainly feels like a fog is coming down, Ben, and we're lucky enough. I'm looking out the window right now. It's still sunny here down in London, well south of where all of this is happening. But it certainly feels like a fog is coming over the land at the moment. I was very struck later in that same article about Thomas, where he says on the morning of his execution, Thomas Aikenhead, he wrote to his friends the following words, which I think are worth remembering, all of us. It is a principle innate and co-natural to every man to have an insatiable inclination to the truth and to seek for it as for hid treasure. I mean, that was on the morning of his execution, Ben. He wrote those words. I mean, this was someone who really knew what freedom was, and who really knew the power of it, which, of course, I think that Streisand effect was probably amplified by virtue of just how clear thinking he was as a victim in this situation. And as you say, the great fear now is that we have a new group of victims, and certainly one group that comes straight to mind in Scotland after the 1st of April are gender-critical feminists, who I think are already concerned and thinking of ways to express that concern and to protect themselves against people who would shut them down simply for saying that a man cannot become a woman and a woman cannot become a man. And that is a particular group, I think, that is worrying at the moment. I mean, quite rightly, people have been concerned for the big ticket names like J.K. Rowling, who is a hero of free speech, and said, I think she said it would be the greatest of all April Fool's jokes if I were actually to go back and start deleting my tweets. That is not going to happen. So we need those great heroes, those clear thinkers, and Scotland has them. Scotland has them in, you know, it's an embarrassment of riches, as you would say, Ben.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think with particular respect to the trans debate, I mean, firstly, being censored for your political or religious or philosophical views and being punished for them is bad enough. But I think there is something particularly dementing about being punished for your views, which are consistent entirely with scientific reality, where all you're saying, all you're doing is repeating scientific fact. And it makes me think of the words attributed to Galileo of "Epa si muove," and yet it still moves. There is that component to it as well, where I think it's even more outrageous that somebody could be censored or prosecuted even for expressing scientific reality, facts about nature and about human nature and biology. And yet that is the position that this legislation creates. And I think we can very safely predict as I said, 4 or 5 days before it actually comes into effect, that it is going to be a complete disaster, not only for those of us who would like to see free speech in Scotland protected and upheld, but I think also for the idiots who force this legislation through. And I think it's quite clear from, you can see the way in which the police have had to take almost 3 years to prepare for this, in the reaction of serving and former police officers as well, who are deeply concerned about the effect of this legislation, both on free speech and on the workload of the police, and in the way it's going to hinder their capacity to respond to, actual crime. I think it's just going to be a disaster all round. And as we said last time, the danger for those of us south of the border is that the proliferation of this type of legislation across the Anglosphere, across the Western world, there is every danger that these types of acts are used as sort of templates, as prototypes, and that this is something that the rest of the UK will be dealing with after the next election potentially as well. So it's really troubling, I think, wherever you are.
And I was thinking, since we recorded last week, which was Around the Woke in 50 Minutes, we talked there about Murdo Fraser, who has had an NCHI, non-crime hate incident, recorded against his name prior to this law coming in. So when people say that we're exaggerating about where the new law might take us, let's just look at where we are already and the sort of worst-case scenarios that have already played out. And what worried me particularly, that we did touch on last time, with the case of Murdo Fraser, he is a politician. He's an active member of the Scottish Parliament, and he's criticising government policy. And the criticism of government policy, i.e. being active in politics, doing your job, has landed him with this NCHI, and the FSU quite rightly is supporting him in a legal challenge against Police Scotland. However, you know, this is political crackdown. This is not allowing political dissent, and this is before the new law comes in. So I love that phrase you mentioned about Galileo. You know, the physics just carries on. I mean, men are still men, women are still women, reality is still, but we are now living in a world of political crackdown. This is how authoritarianism creeps in, and this is how heresy is punished in the new world. And I read a few articles that said, the right are just worrying too much. And also certain groups are just worrying too much. Well, let's look at where we are even before the 1st of April, and then to do a simple extrapolation from there, and you can see the horror of where this is most likely to go. We may be proved wrong. I mean, I think, Ben, all of us at the Free Speech Union, we would love to be proved wrong. We would love to be shown that this is simply going to be a nothing burger, which is a new phrase I've heard recently. You know, a nothing burger. Nothing's going to happen. No more, or no better, no worse. It's just neutral. Fine. Yeah, that'd be amazing. I really want that to be true. But I just don't think the evidence so far points in that direction at all.
Can we stick just on the subject of non-crime hate incidents just for a moment longer? Mm. There's this battle, as you've just said, with Murdo Fraser, who we've been helping, who are continuing to help get this scrubbed from his record. We do have a victory to mark south of the border on this issue, which is the case of Rachel McLean, the Conservative politician, deputy chair of the Conservative Party, who had a non-crime hate incident recorded against her last year, after she said that the Green Party don't know what a woman is. So Rachel McLean had reportedly shared a post in which she described a trans Green Party candidate as a man who wears a wig and calls himself a proud lesbian. Now, I would submit to listeners that should not be an incident that is recorded anywhere in a police database for any purpose at any time. There is no reason for doing so. Anyway, following our intervention and our letter to the police force in question, that non-crime hate incident has been removed from her record, which is very encouraging. So these things can be unpicked and undone. It's just a pity that we all have to waste our time campaigning for the bleeding obvious, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
But anyway, that's a good win. That's a good win.
It's a fantastic win, and it's a wonderful sort of mirror image case, isn't it, of sort of Rachel McLean south of the border and Murdo Fraser north of the border. Very, very similar. Under different codes, obviously separate police forces and run pretty independently, but astonishing that we've had both those cases kind of cross our desk at about the same time. So we can win this. And I actually was thinking I should apologize to listeners from last week, because I was talking about the frustration about how we win these things is often by building on legislation that we, in many ways, would prefer not to have. And we talk about the Equality Act. I think I said Tower of Babylon last week. I meant Tower of Babel. I was saying to Ben, I seem to get my words in a complete muddle sometimes. But yes, we've built this sort of Tower of Babel, of this unstable structure on laws that we're appealing to. And it's great that we can win, but wouldn't we rather have better laws in the first place, a better approach and a better attitude to free speech? That would be, but I mean, that's like saying I'd rather not start where we are.
Yeah, I mean, the Equality Act point is interesting, and this is something that the FSU doesn't have a kind of corporate position on. And there would be disagreement, I think, quite widely among our staff and supporters about this, because on the one hand, it is one of the very few protections that you have if you are an employee who has expressed gender critical views, who has expressed criticism of critical race theory and defended a colorblind approach to race, as in the case of Sean Corby. If you've expressed criticism of Islam as part of your secular atheist worldview, a sort of Thomas Aikenhead character. So it protects all of those things and many others besides. The problem with it, as we've spoken about before, is that we have got into a position where your views are basically not protected until an employment tribunal has decided that they are worthy of respect in a democratic society. So we're producing this sort of unwieldy list of views that are protected, and people then have to go through this process of 18 months or 2 years even to get to the point where they can sort of retroactively have their beliefs declared as valid by a judge, which I think is utterly bonkers. But as I said, it is a piece of legislation that we rely upon for want of anything better. So it's a double-edged sword. And I think views will vary among listeners and certainly among FSU staff and so on. Anyway, that's not what we're talking about. Sorry, Tom.
We've gone down a rabbit hole. I think, but before we move on to our next segment, Ben, I just wanted to return to that excellent article by CJ Strachan.
Yes.
And I just wanted to quote again from what he says or she says in that article. Mr. Yusuf, his ministers, and those who drafted and will enforce this new law would do well to remember how history judged those who hanged Thomas Aikenhead on that bleak winter morning on the road to Leith. In doing so, they should recall that this gross act of overreach and tyranny was the high tide of the power of the Kirk, power which was swept aside by the forces unleashed when the people said, "Enough." Which is a nice segue into our next segment, isn't it? Which is about the Free Speech Union, really, and what's our role going to be in the next few months and over the years to come, and in battling this new legislation and supporting our compatriots in Scotland. And great news, Ben, isn't it, that we have actually seen an uptick in our Scottish membership.
Well, an uptick or indeed a surge, nice. I think.
Fair to say.
It's been quite a dramatic surge in members north of the border who are obviously horrified by what's gone on. And, you know, even actually if it were just what's happened to Murdo Fraser in his case, I think that would trigger a lot of people to think, crikey, we need to do something about this. This is completely insane. But it's the fact that that's happened even before the Hate Crime Act has come into effect, and the Hate Crime Act, just days away from coming into force, that there has been a real surge of people joining up as members to protect themselves and indeed to protect others, and also lots of people writing to say, what does this mean? For instance, if I've posted tweets about trans stuff, you know, do I have to go back through my ex, formerly known as Twitter, timeline and purge all of it, and all this sort of thing? So it has created a real chilling effect already, and I don't think people are wrong to be very afraid of what this piece of legislation will mean for them. Mm. One of the things I worry about, Tom, with this podcast sometimes is that when we're describing the effect of a piece of legislation like this, or when we're describing the fact that, for instance, there will be a sort of hate crime pop-up reporting shop in a sex shop in Scotland.
A mushroom farm.
People must think we're making this up. Mm. I mean, it's so implausible, and I'm conscious this is going out around April Fool's Day, but those details, I think we referred to them last week, in fact, so I promise you we're not making them up, but I do wonder, I mean, there must be people listening to this, or, you know, parents have got this on and teenage children are listening in the background tutting and thinking, oh, that can't be true, that must be fake news, there's no way that's real. And yet it is.
It really is. And we swim in these waters as well. I'm sure many of our listeners, to be fair, probably swim in these waters as well and are reading the items. But there's a fair chunk, isn't there, of people who are probably just living their lives, going to Tesco, enjoying their Easter, having a normal weekend, and they're going to get caught by this. I mean, it reminds me of the utterly flawed advertising, in my opinion, the utterly flawed advertising campaign relating to the hate monster, where one of the things the hate monster says is, da-di-da-di-da-di-da, says this, that, and the other, and then says, and before you know it, you've committed a hate crime. Now, isn't that a damning phrase? Before you know it, you've committed a hate crime. I mean, Ben, I very rarely find that before I know it, I've burgled someone. I very, very rarely do I find before I know it, I've murdered someone. But advertising campaign is saying that we now have a law, or we now have an environment in which the law is so muddy and so grey that before you know it, you've broken it. Now, that is kind of admitting the problem, I think. And therefore, going back to your point about how nutty this is and how crazy this is, you don't need to dig far to find that it's admitted by the other side.
I was watching an episode of The West Wing, I think it was last year or perhaps the year before, and there was this kind of debate among the White House staff. So it's made in the early 90s. And there's this debate about hate crime and to what extent hate should be an aggravating factor in sentencing guidelines and so on. And what's interesting is among this Democratic center-to-center-left administration, there are people who are horrified at the idea that you are policing what is in people's minds. And the debate has moved on so rapidly, and the Overton window has shifted so far to the left on this, at least among the level of political elites and police and NGOs and so on, that it seemed actually quite bizarre. Yeah. And it's a sort of interesting historical artifact, that episode. Yeah. Of documenting the way in which thought has become so, I'm reluctant to use the word radicalized, but has become radicalized on this issue, and the sort of uniformity of thought about responding to, in inverted commas, hate, and that's led us to the point that Scotland is now at.
I was just going to go back to Newton's first law. You've mentioned Galileo. I might as well mention the great Sir Isaac Newton. And apologies, he's a great Englishman, not a great Scot. Maybe I'm wrong on that. Often you look at these great Englishmen and they have Scottish roots, almost invariably. But his first law says an object persists in its present state of motion unless acted upon by an unequal external force. And I remember that wrote because I grew up on it, and the point being, once this ball against free speech and free expression started rolling, and there were no sufficient external and unequal forces. The ball was just going to carry on rolling. And now I'm going to put it down a hill, yeah, and it was going to start accelerating. So that's like a jump to Newton's second law there. We need a third law, which is we need a reaction to it. But anyway,
an equal and opposite reaction.
That's where we need.
Gosh, we're doing a lot of physics today.
We are for history in Scotland. I mean, you know, Scotland is engineering, medicine, physics, philosophy. If we can remind ourselves, just really go back to what Scotland's given the world. It's a rich room. It's Aladdin's cave when you go in and have a look at it. If I'm not mixing too many metaphors.
Can I out myself, Tom, as a massive Trekkie and refer to another piece of classic 1990s television?
Sure.
Which is an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, where Patrick Stewart's character is being tortured by a sort of fascistic race of aliens called not the Cardassians, but the Cardassians.
And I was muddled them up.
Part of this sort of process is of breaking his will, and the interrogator is trying to get him to say that there are not four lights in front of him, but I think three or five. But anyway, to give a wrong answer, to give a sort of 2 + 2 = 5 answer, and throughout the episode, he refuses to say anything other than there are four lights. And it is that same, I mean, that must obviously be inspired by the Galileo, and yet it still moves. Mm. And people have already set out plans to test what this law will mean in practice. Andrew Doyle, for instance, there's going to be this comedy show and so on. Many public figures now have come out to say that we will be saying such and such after the 1st of April. We will continue to speak our minds on whatever issue, particularly on trans. And so it seems quite likely, again, we're hostage to fortune because we're speaking before this has happened, but it seems to me quite likely, very likely, in fact, that the police are going to be overwhelmed with malicious complaints targeting the J.K. Rowlings and for Women Scotland and so on. So when we speak next time, I wonder what we'll be talking about and what the scope of it's going to be.
And I think it's worth on that point, and at that point, Ben, just for all of our new members and new listeners from Scotland, outlining what the Free Speech Union can do. So first of all, I'd say, look, we have a Scotland office that was actually established in spring 2022, 2 years ago, to address the specific free speech concerns that have arisen north of the border. Fraser Hudgton, one of your colleagues, one of my colleagues, but specifically, you know, works very closely with Ben on casework. He's based in Scotland and is the director of our Scottish office. We have a Scottish Advisory Council, so we can tap into people who are on the ground, very high profile people who are on the ground in Scotland. And that includes Joanna Cherry, KC, Member of Parliament for Edinburgh South West, and indeed Murdo Fraser, MSP, whom we discussed earlier, both on the different sides of politics. So this is not partisan. This is not one side. It's both sides, or multiple sides, rather. And as well as high-profile politicians, our Scottish Advisory Council includes academics, it includes writers, it includes poets. So we've got Scotland covered. All of those individuals are concerned about the erosion of free speech. And we have a website page dedicated to our Scottish office. And on that page, Joanna Cherry is quoted. And she says, free speech in Scotland is under threat from laws open to being weaponized to censor legal speech emanating from both Holyrood and Westminster. And the establishment of FSU Scotland is therefore timely and needed. And I'm delighted to join the Advisory Council. So the only other thing is I sort of draw the camera back from Scotland to the whole idea of a free speech union. I think we've said a couple of times, Ben, the idea was mocked, I think, back in 2020 when it was mooted and Tobin made it happen. But now, 4 years later, I mean, the idea of a free speech union is fully battle tested, isn't it? And the verdict is in. The verdict is in. We are needed. Yeah. And I think I went back and watched the video that Toby Young actually released on the day he launched the FSU. And in that video, He says, the enemies of free speech hunt in packs. Its defenders need to band together too. Whatever it takes, we'll defend your right to speak freely without fear of being punished. So, you know, welcome to all our Scottish members. Welcome to all our Scottish listeners. And, you know, we've got your back. That's what Toby has promised. And I think it's fair to say, Ben, you're on the front line. Toby has delivered on that with, you know, he's built us, he's built a team up, and he's built a network up, multiple networks. And I think we have delivered on that. We have proved that we have people's backs when it comes to freedom of expression and free speech. So I just thought it was worth outlining some of what we can offer people north of the border and, of course, anywhere, you know, in the United Kingdom. And we love our support from overseas as well, that we don't have the legal expertise, but we have partner organizations, sister organizations around the world. But, you know, we're here for Scotland and for the Scottish people. We're not always here for the Scottish government.
Yeah, I mean, at one point, if I could just pick up there, obviously there was this argument that, you know, back in 2020, as you've said, that it was a kind of nonsense, you know, the idea that there was this real phenomenon of cancel culture and that people were being punished for things they were saying. And there was this sort of sneering from The Guardian and so on. But I would just note that in the last 3 weeks, each week has set a new record in terms of the number of open cases, that is to say the number of individual people that we are helping. And that figure, as of this moment, stands at 165 open cases. And we're well on our way now to 2,500 cases in total. And our favourite statistic that I think we can bring out once again is that where we're involved from beginning to end, where there's a clear outcome, that outcome is favourable to our member 74% of the time. And it's quite gratifying, actually. I think we do not see the argument any longer. This is a kind of confected outrage and that this isn't really a problem. I think instead, people just who don't want to be interested in this just ignore it and, you know, perhaps continue to pretend quietly that it's not happening. Yeah. But we don't seem to see the argument so often now that this isn't happening.
Well, I think if someone were to put your boots on, Ben, and walk in your shoes, look at me. Toby picked me up once for mixing my metaphors. I have a hideous habit of mixing my metaphors. But if someone were to put your boots on, it would take them, what, maybe half an hour, perhaps even 5 minutes to realize the truth of what you're saying as they see the people who cry out to you and ask for more help than we want to give it to them, and we have more than enough to do based on exactly the statistics you just outlined.
If any of our critics would like to come and look through my email inbox or the inbox of any of our case or legal team, they will find, in fact, there is plenty of evidence that cancel culture is quite real, I'm afraid. But anyway,
but we're looking ahead as well, aren't we, Ben? I was thinking about not just the hate crime in Scotland, but there's other bad law coming in Scotland. In particular, the conversion therapy ban is a muddled piece of law from a free speech and free expression perspective, and we have been involved in making a contribution to the consultation on that. And we believe that it would make it illegal to change or suppress, and, you know, it would make it illegal to change or suppress another individual's gender identity. And Fraser, who we mentioned earlier, our director of the Scotland office, told the Mail just a week or so ago, this is a quote, "The conversion therapy ban proposals, if put on the statute book, have the potential to trample all over a parent's right to discuss with their child what options are best for them, raise the prospect of doctors fleeing for the hills if the subject of gender identity comes up, and religious leaders forced to keep their beliefs to themselves." So we're looking, you know, that's a very worrying additional piece of legislation. It's relentless, isn't it, Ben? We've talked about the hate crime. We've got this conversion therapy ban coming through. It's relentless, but we've got our eye on what's coming. We've got our eye on where we are. We're looking in the rearview mirror to see how we can improve the law that's already on the statute books. And at the micro level, we're supporting individuals. You know, every case matters. Every individual story matters and is quite, you know, it's difficult not to get too emotionally involved sometimes, I think, Ben. I think sometimes you and I, you know, off camera or off when we got the microphones turned off, we enjoy just talking to each other, to look after each other because of what the difficulty and the difficult situations that you particularly are seeing every day.
Don't start crying.
I think I cried once in about 1982, Ben. I haven't since. Yeah. By the way, if there are any therapists listening, I don't think I need therapy, but you may disagree with me. I'm perfectly happy without it.
Well, no, I mean, I do make a serious point. I mean, you know, actually, I do speak to lots of people who get very emotional describing what's going on, and with very good reason. Yeah. You know, if you think you're going to lose your job and you can't afford to pay the bills and look after your family and all the rest of it, I mean, there's few things as stressful as that. Yeah. So, yeah, jokes aside, absolutely. Yeah. Now, Tom, you want to mark April Fool's Day now.
Well, I also feel it's been a tough episode so far. I think it's been an important episode. This whole area of the hate crime bill and the concerns for Scotland, but it is April Fool's, and we have a tradition on this podcast that's 1 year so far. Our third episode where we have a little bit of a segment on April Fool's Day. And so we've given it away already, but what I'm going to do, Ben, is I'm going to test you. I'm going to read out three stories and two of them are not true. And one of them is true. So you're in the hot seat right now. The spotlight is on you, Ben, and your ability to discern truth from falsehood. And if you don't do it, I might report you or something like that. Who knows? I can do that.
You might march off to your local sex shop.
I might do that. So many to choose from in London as well. Okay, so we've got three scenarios, Ben. You've got to decide. And don't jump in straight off the bat. Wait till I've gone through all three. But this is scenario A. The launch of BBC Verify. The BBC have decided to launch a new Verify service to verify their BBC Verify service, following repeated concerns about misinformation and disinformation. Taking as its motto an adapted version of the famous Latin phrase quis custodes ipsos custodes, or who will guard the guards themselves, a spokesman for BVV said, "We must take a belt and braces approach and represent the news in a truthful and impartial way. Now you can be sure that you're getting not just the truth, but more than the truth plus, if you will." The new unit will be headed by a Mr. P. Pilot. He released a statement last night saying, "What is truth?" Apparently, plans are already afoot for BBC Verify. Ben's Latin teacher also reportedly said, "That's not the correct translation. You need the genitive plural. Why do I bother?" So that's scenario A. As I say, don't jump in, Ben.
Okay.
You're going to have to work out whether that's true or false. Anyway, here we go. Here's scenario B. Scotland's first Minister for Thought Crime is none other than the Emperor Hadrian. A renowned member of both the LGBT and SPQR communities, Hadrian is the perfect candidate for this newly announced role. A spokesman for the Scottish government said that the Emperor's social justice activism, particularly the building of, quote, a bloody great wall on the border with England, had been more effective than any other measure in stopping a flood of English hatred from pouring over the border. The spokesman brushed over some of the more brutal activities of Hadrian's legion, saying that freedom of speech does not mean freedom from consequences, and sometimes those consequences may sadly include the odd brutal massacre. But there are always other towns and villages to plunder, I mean protect. So that is B. Ben, don't jump in.
Okay.
Don't make assumptions. I'm waiting here. Okay, so now we have C coming up, scenario C. Hate monster cancelled. Police Scotland have denied that its controversial hate monster is no more after the webpage linking to the campaign disappeared. Police Scotland's website had stated that the monster usually lives in young men aged 18 to 30, particularly those from socially excluded communities who are heavily influenced by their peers. but the hate monster has now gone missing from its main webpage on the force's website, as the first Google link takes you to a 404 page. It reads, "I'm afraid the page you're looking for either isn't available or doesn't exist." Scottish Tory MSP Stephen Kerr said, "The hate monster has been cancelled." The unofficial hate monster X account wrote, "Please, Scotland, have deleted my page, which hurts my feelings and is therefore a hate crime." So you've got scenario A, BBC verify. You've got scenario B, the Emperor Hadrian is the new Scottish minister for thought crime. And B and C, the hate monster's being cancelled, Ben, which is true.
Can I go to the Emperor Hadrian first?
I have to take the first answer.
I think his sort of vibe would be a bit more LGB alliance. I'm not quite sure he'd go all in for the LGBTQIA plus.
Yeah. We did speak to Antonoose, actually. We did speak to Antonoose and he agreed on that.
Yeah, okay. So I think that's not right about the Emperor Hadrian being appointed as a minister in the Scottish government.
But he is part of the SPQR community. You can't deny that.
I mean, he is, and I get that the wall building stuff might be attractive to some Scottish nationalists. So I see that. I think probably his record in Jerusalem leaves quite a lot to be desired from an equality standpoint as well. Mm. So I think I'm going to say that is, I don't know, what's the Latin term for bollocks?
My Latin doesn't go that far either. I'm sure we could find an ancient wall with graffiti on it that might have it on it.
Let's go for bollocks at the moment.
There we go. Your Latin teacher is in despair, Ben, by the way.
I was terrible to my Latin teacher at school, actually, Tom. I was very lucky to go to a state school that taught Latin, which was very unusual. But I was quite naughty, actually. I'm ashamed to say. Anyway, right. BBC verify. BBC verify. Now, this does sound like the sort of W1A initiative that the BBC might come out with.
Perfect curve involved.
So there's a degree of plausibility to it. What I don't think is plausible about this is that BBC would have the level of introspection required. I mean, if you've ever tried to make a complaint about the BBC, you know, you are banging your head against Hadrian's Wall. there's just no point doing it, basically, or very rarely. So I don't think that's true. I think you're having
Goodness me, you don't believe anything I say, Ben.
And this leaves the hate monster, who you say has been, or euthanized. I think that's true. I think it probably is possible to bludgeon Police Scotland into admitting that they have embarrassed themselves with this.
You're a smart cookie monster. So you're a smart cookie monster. True. Spot on.
Thank you, Tom.
Hey, number C was actually true, and it was rather delightful as well, because it showed me the was able to see the hate monster's fake Twitter account, which it's, I don't know whether it's Andrew Doyle behind it, because he's behind the Titania McGrath thing as well, isn't he? And it's he's very, very sharp at setting these things up. I don't know. I may be completely wrong there. It's probably someone else caught on with the idea, but it's fantastic. That's hurt my feelings, and I'm reporting you to the police.
Can I just? I'm now looking at your notes, Tom. So I was not pre-briefed before my quizzing then. By the April Fool's Inquisition. But is it really true that Police Scotland's website had stated that the hate monster usually lives in young men aged 18 to 30 and from those who come from socially excluded communities who are heavily influenced by the... Is that really what they said?
This is one of the news items that has been reported over the last 2 weeks quite a lot, is this sort of pinpointing of a particular demographic with a sort of greater propensity to be hateful. And of course, everyone said, well, that makes no sense. You know, if someone's rich, they're just as able and has resources, they're just as able to be hateful. And it's just another version of this identity politics, isn't it, Ben, where you've got this prior expectation that a certain group is going to behave in a certain... It's cartoon. I suppose it's the hate monster. It's cartoon way of looking at the world, goodies and baddies. And God, it's dreadful.
I mean, that is extraordinary, isn't it?
It really is extraordinary.
Yeah.
It really is extraordinary.
All right, well... Happy April Fool's Day if you're listening on the 1st. Yes. Good luck if you're living in Scotland. And we are with you.
We are.
Sign up if you've not done already. We are very, very, very committed to your defence. And I just repeat, Tom, a little of what you said, that this is an issue that has brought together both sides of the constitutional divide in Scottish politics. Mm. It's brought together Conservatives, SNP, dissidents, ALBA Party, and so on. So do get in touch if you need our help. And we'll see you next time. And God only knows what the situation will be when we speak next, Tom, about this.
Yeah. Mate, I hope everyone has enjoyed at least something of an Easter break as well. It's good to get away from some of this stuff and get our minds clear. But we're here for everybody. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And we will speak to you next week.
Happy Easter. Mm-hmm.